The Cinderella Theorem by Christy Ravan. For Lisa, who loves math. For Kelly, who loves Cinderella. And for Jason, who loves me. If you want your children to be intelligent, read them fairy tales. If you want them to be more intelligent, read them more fairy tales. Albert Einstein. Chapter 1, Pretzels and the Box. Lily, Mrs. Price, my guidance counselor, flashed a fake smile. You have forgotten to put any fun in your schedule. Why don't I switch you out of geometry and put you in health and careers? Lots of students say this is a fun class. She let that last part dangle in the air like a worm on a hook. I don't like worms on hooks. No thanks. Mrs. Price shifted in her seat, still smiling. And this class will help you discover what you're good at as you explore your career options. Chatting with a woman who couldn't recite the Pythagorean theorem wasn't exactly how I thought I would be spending my first day of high school. I know what I want my career to be. Mrs. Price sat up straighter, leaning forward. Oh, and what is that? I want to do pure mathematics research at a major university or be a codebreaker for the National Security Agency. Her eyebrows arched. I think she thought I was going to say, I want to be a doctor when I grow up, or I want to be an artist. Lily, Mrs. Price said slowly, are your parents pressuring you to take more math classes? No. I folded my arms across my chest. Mrs. Price has incorrectly assigned two parents to me. This can lead to an error in the equation of my family. My least favorite error in the equation of my family. One Lily plus one mother equals the Sparrow family. The Sparrow family does not equal one Lily plus one mother plus one father. Lily, if you don't want to take these extra math classes, you don't have to. Your parents can't make you. I want to take geometry. Lily, Mrs. Price paused dramatically. Do you know you can talk to me about anything? Was that supposed to make me open up to her? Mrs. Price had not equalized her equation. She assumed one simple reminder that I could talk to her would equal me sharing my deepest beliefs and ideas. I sighed, rolling my eyes. Mrs. Price, no one is pressuring me to take math classes. I just like math, that's all. Mrs. Price frowned. I hoped you would agree with me, Lily, and change your mind about these classes, because I'm afraid I can't allow you to jeopardize your academic career with difficult classes that will cause you extra stress. Besides, our school district frowns upon students taking more than one math course a year. I'm going to switch you from geometry to health and careers, from statistics to tennis, and from pre-calculus to legendary literature. This will be a much less stressful class load for you. It was my turn to frown, scowl, actually. How exactly are health and careers, tennis, and legendary literature going to help me in life? I was especially disgusted with legendary literature. Tennis was at least active, and I supposed health and careers could, at the very least, be informative. Lily, I'm sure you'll enjoy these classes. Other students in our school have rated these electives as some of their favorites. Now run on back to class. She returned my schedule card, all marked up and practically math-free. Could I look at the population and sample data used to arrive at that conclusion? Other students in our school did not want to be mathematics researchers. Other students in our school did not understand that math was fundamental to all life. Other students in our school did not love math. I did. Mrs. Price called cheerily. Oh, I almost forgot. Happy birthday, Lily. Yeah, what a great start to my birthday. Resigned to my mathless fate, I walked back to class, calculating how many days were left until I graduated and escaped to college. 4 years times the 180 days required by the state equals 720 days, minus the half a morning I wasted arguing with Mrs. Price about the joy of mathematics, equals 719 and 3/4 days. My mother is a famous writer. In this equation, famous equals distracted. For some reason that I have not been able to calculate, being a famous writer makes it difficult to focus on any one thing for extended periods of time, including daughter's birthdays. Writing is not as exact as math. To combat her distraction, I mark my birthday on every calendar in the house. It's not so much that mom forgets my birthday, it's that she gets distracted while planning. This year, I took an additional precaution. I changed her screensaver to, Lily's birthday is Thursday, with 5 exclamation points. So, having solved the problem of the distractedness, we are usually ready to proceed with normal birthday celebrations. I say usually, because there are occasionally book signings or tours that cause further issues. This year, however, there were none of these kinds of complications. That is not to say that there were no complications. There was, in fact, a huge one. I came home from school intending to go out to dinner with my mother. That is a normal, mathematical way to celebrate a birthday. I grabbed a handful of pretzels from the bowl on the counter and popped my head into mom's office to say hello. Mom's office equals a cluttered, messy room full of unorganized paper scraps that contain notes about her stories. Mom smiled at me. How was school? Not enough math. I munched a pretzel. What time are we going out tonight? Going out? Mom's voice was quieter, distracted. She was sinking back into her novel. For dinner? For my birthday? Eyes fixed on her computer screen, she answered, No, Matt's bringing dinner. Matt? Matt who? I quickly ran a mental index of my mother's friends, acquaintances, and contacts for a Matt. Mom gasped, covered her mouth with her hand, and mumbled, Oh, it was supposed to be a surprise. What am I? Mom! I grabbed her shoulders, crushing a pretzel in my palm. Stop! Who is Matt? Explain logically. She nodded. Okay, let's sit down. She led the way to the living room and sat beside me on the couch, patting me on the back. The thing is, Lily, I don't want to explain too much without your father. He... Wait, what? I interrupted. My father? Oh, fiddlesticks. I did it again. Matt's going to kill me. I do fine for 15 years and blow it on the last day. Why am I... Mom! Right. Well, she took a breath. To begin, I should say that your father is not dead. But he is dead. You told me that he died, that the train he was on hit a cow. If I seem a little slow to understand what Mom is telling me, keep in mind that 15 years of believing my dad was dead was greater than 3 minutes of hearing he was alive. No, sweetie, she patted my knee. He's not dead. He is alive, and he's coming to dinner. I don't understand. The train wrecked, the cow died, dad died. You showed me the Channel 6 news footage. Mom sighed. Why is she sighing? Did she think that I would automatically understand? Did I miss the Lily, your dad is not dead memo? There was a train wreck, a cow did die, and it was on the news. But your father was not on the train. I took a deep breath and tried to sort out the emotions crowding my brain. Shock and disbelief. What she's saying can't be possible, can it? Joy and happiness, too. My dad's alive. But years of dealing with my mom have made me logical. One of us has to stay focused, so I pushed all the emotions down and focused on gathering more data. Okay, where has he been? He wants to explain all this to you himself. And he should be the one to do it. Can we just leave it at he's not dead, and he's coming to dinner tonight? But why did he tell me he was dead? It was safer for everyone if you thought that. But Lily, your father can explain this a lot better than me. She stood. Now, I need to get to work on getting the princess to fall in love with the prince, and you should probably get your homework done before dinner. I'm sure you're going to have a lot to talk about with your dad. She turned to go back to the office. Are you kidding me? That's the end of the conversation? I followed Mom into her office. But you lied to me. She sank into her chair, sighing. Lily, there will be a lot of discussion about this tonight. Please, let's just wait until then. She added in a lower voice. I wasn't supposed to have to do this alone. So stupid of me to slip up. So we're not going to talk about it now? Lily, I have a deadline. You have homework. Go do it. Fine. I slammed the door on my way out. Mom was wrong to assume I had homework. It was the first day of school. We wasted most of the day passing out textbooks and going over rules. I spent my homework time analyzing the events of the afternoon and putting all my emotions back in their neat boxes. Emotions cloud logical thinking. I try to keep all that illogical, messy stuff put away so I can focus on analyzing, gathering data, and formulating equations. Specifically, I needed to place Mom's shocking new variables into the equation of Lily's life. Lily equals a 5-foot normal freshman girl who has shoulder-length blonde hair, green eyes, and a distracted mother. The new variables that now had to be put into my equation were A equals my father is alive, and B equals my mother is a liar. A and B were dependent upon one another. For instance, my mother was proved to be a liar, B, because my father is alive, A. My father's being alive, A, was a secret because my mother is a liar, B. How is that normal? Statistically speaking, teenagers should have parents who create supportive environments for them to grow in during their difficult formative years. This was the mathematically proven way of success. How were a dead father, who was not dead, and a mother, who was a liar, supportive? What teenager sits around on her 15th birthday trying to think of questions to ask her mother about her used-to-be-dead father? I was led to believe my father died in a bizarre train-slash-cow incident 2 days before I was born. I always thought of it like this. After the accident equals Amtrak minus one train, plus Lily minus one father, plus Farmer Jones minus one cow. But none of that mattered anymore since my father was not actually dead. How unfortunate there wasn't enough time in the plan of Lily's life for therapy discussing cows, liars, and fathers. I dug around to the bottom of my closet looking for the box my mother gave me for my 5th birthday. It contained everything I knew about my father, and once upon a time I thought it was the best birthday present ever. But now that I have my father back from the dead, I guess that would rank as the best. Obviously, a not-dead father was a much better gift than a box of memories about him. When I was younger, I kept the box beside my bed. I was very afraid of the dark as a child, and having the box next to me gave irrational comfort. Mom leaving the hall light on helped, too. But as I grew older, and no longer needed the box beside me to sleep, I put it away in my closet, getting it out less and less to look at the items and think about my father. And this past year, I hadn't even looked at the box since my last birthday. I blew the dust off, slowly opening the lid to hear the creak of the hinges. I liked that sound. The box had a tarnished keyhole, but the key had been lost before I ever received it. I ran my fingers over the lid, feeling the words carved on the smooth wooden surface. Our only protector, HRHMS. When I asked my mother about the words on the box, she said she didn't know what they meant. Dad had never explained them to her. She was probably lying. There were three items in the box, three tangible mathematical facts about my father. The first was a solid blue marble, the color of a tropical island lagoon or something else that is blue. Color descriptions in the mathematical world are simpler. To me, the marble is blue. To my author mother, the marble is blue, the color of the sky after hearing that the king of the land has fallen in love, or some other strange description that has nothing to do with colors or marbles. My mother told me that marble was my dad's. He was so good at marbles as a boy that marble playing stopped at his school because no one could beat him. I decided I too would become skilled at marble playing. I got pretty good, but marbles was not a game children played at my school, so I mostly played by myself. The kids at my school wasted their time playing non-mathematical games like Chase the Cute Boy, Dodgeball, or Tag. Based on what I've seen in math classes with them, they would have better spent their time at marbles with its emphasis on geometry and probability. My mother would sometimes play with me, usually whenever she needed a break from her characters, but I never played with a blue marble. In my elementary school mind, I reasoned that I would save the blue marble for the game I would one day play with my father. At 7, mathematical facts like the surety of death are not overly important. I do, however, find considerable irony in the fact that now, apparently, I can play that game with my dear old dad. The second item in the box was the antique brass doorknob my father used when he proposed to my mother. He said, "I am giving you the doorknob to my heart because you are the only one who can open it," or something else equally sugary and romantic. Even though romance is too abstract to be mathematical, I always thought this was a tremendously clever way to say I love you. Evidently, so did Mom. The third item in the box was a letter from my father to me. It was written the day before he died, or whatever the news story will be. For all I know, my mother could have written the letter. She is, after all, a writer. This is what he wrote. "Dear future Sparrow Child, I wanted to take the time to write down what I am feeling at this moment. I'm rather excited and pleased that in a few days, or maybe less, I will officially be your father. I wanted you to know you are coming into a wonderful family. Your mother will dream up wonderful stories to tell you, and I will help you explore this new world of yours. We're going to have a grand adventure together. I can't wait to see you. Counting the minutes until I can be your father." Now that Mom had given me new data to consider, I wasn't sure what to think about the letter anymore. Did he know he was leaving when he wrote it? How could he write such a letter of excitement and then leave? And for that matter, why did my mother say it was safer for everyone if I thought he was dead? Was he dangerous? I leaned toward a no on this issue. In my experience, people who are dangerous do not propose with doorknobs. There were no pictures of my father in the box, or in the house for that matter. Mom did not like to answer questions about pictures. It made her very defensive and bothered, and I had given up looking for them in the closets or in the attic. There were just no pictures of my father. Here is a list of reasons she has given to explain why there are no pictures. Number 1, a random car fire ruined her camera. Number 2, his parents were against the marriage, so they had a very quick and simple wedding with no photographer. Number 3, her parents were against the marriage, so they had a very quick and simple wedding with no photographer. Number 4, they dated only a short time, so there weren't many opportunities for pictures. Number 5, they were just so in love, they never bothered with taking pictures. I had been working on a theory that Mom burned all of them in some sort of grief cleansing after he died. But now he wasn't dead. Was he a spy? Or maybe he was a tortured, drug-addicted musician? Both of those theories would support Mom saying it was safer for everyone if I thought he was dead. I shook my head. Speculation was not mathematical, and the trouble with looking for tangible facts about my father in the box was that the equation the box sets up is this. What I know about my father equals M open parentheses, one blue marble plus one doorknob plus one letter plus one old box, close parentheses. M equals what my mother says about my father. I could reasonably conclude that M was tainted by my mother's lies and thereby tainted the whole solution. But if I took M out, I'd have no information at all. Multiplying by zero equals zero. Zero stories about my dad. Just a box. And for the first time, looking through the box had made me angry. All these things I knew about my dead father were probably lies. Just one of Mom's stories made up to entertain her daughter. I shoved the blue marble in my pocket. Then I put the box away and checked the clock. Almost 5. 5 o'clock was always supper time in the Sparrow home. I didn't know how this kind of schedule worked with a distracted mother, but somehow it did. She always had supper ready at 5 o'clock, no matter what her characters in their story world were doing. I saw no signs of supper in the kitchen. Nothing. I looked in the office. Mom was still busy writing. What were the odds on the day I found out my dad wasn't really dead, my mom also forgot to cook supper? I wanted to ask my mom about supper, but I didn't want to ask about my father specifically because that would be weird, and I didn't want to lash out at her. Cool, rational thinking wins the day. I didn't want to say, for instance, "Hey, Mom, you may have lied to me for 15 years, but don't you need to be cooking something? It isn't every day Dad comes over for dinner." So I said instead, "What are we having for dinner tonight?" Mom continued writing for a moment, then realized I had spoken. "I don't know, whatever your dad brings home." I stood shocked for a moment. A man I have never met, a man who has been dead my whole life, was bringing home my special birthday dinner? He was bringing it home? To our home? We had a leaky faucet that had lived here longer than he had. This was not his home. Home implied permanency. Mom looked at me. "Why are you staring like that, Lily?" "What do you mean he's bringing it home?" "Try to understand, Lily." Mom patted my arm and spoke slowly as if she were talking to a 3-year-old or a crazy person. "Your dad is coming home for your birthday, and he is bringing dinner with him." I stared at her. "You mean he's coming over for dinner, right? He can't be coming home because he doesn't live here." "Lily, he'll be here in less than 5 minutes. Do we really have to discuss whether he's coming over or coming home at this exact moment?" She started stacking her notes in different piles, a sign that writing was done for the day. "Yes, we do have to discuss it now." I folded my arms. "You don't get to lie to me and then say a stranger is coming home and then try to neatly stack me up like one of your writing notes." "Lily," Mom's voice was stern, "we are not doing this now. If you need to go back upstairs to calm down, fine, but I don't want your father coming home to us screaming at each other." I could tell I was on the verge of becoming irrational, so I stomped upstairs to brush my teeth. I had been about to stomp my foot and yell some more. I don't like to lose control. It's unmathematical and embarrassing. And I tend to brush my teeth when I get annoyed. What does she mean, coming home? On the landing, I stepped over the minivac Mom had left through her distraction plugged in. Most likely this morning, when she was supposed to be vacuuming the stairs, inspiration seized her and she abandoned cleaning for writing. I stomped into the bathroom, annoyed with my adult role model. How was I supposed to grow up in this abnormal environment? Just as I finished angrily squeezing toothpaste onto my toothbrush, the shower curtain was pushed back by a fully clothed man standing in the bathtub. "Lily," he said, "happy birthday!" Thank you for listening to this chapter. If you can't wait until next week for chapter 2, you can always purchase The Cinderella Theorem from Amazon.com in either a print or Kindle version. If you have a question for me, please reach out on the Lily Sparrow Chronicles Facebook page.